Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as many of you know, we're having climate conversations on the program every day this week as part of WNYC's Covering Climate Now series. And we also have our single-use plastic challenge going through the end of the week. Some of us here at the station and some of you have been noticing how much single-use plastic we run into in our lives, writing it down in a log, and or seeing how low we can go to eliminate it, including when we fail, to document what some of the harder parts are of cutting down on single-use plastic. And remember, we're inviting you to post a photo of either a success or a struggle with eliminating single-use plastic. Post it to Instagram or Twitter with the hashtag plastic challenge, plastic singular, hashtag plastic challenge. In the success category, one thing that we've been happy to see is some of you posting tips that help other listeners solve problems with this. For example, some of you are grappling with those plastic bags, not the shopping bags at the cashier, but the ones we get in the produce section to put loose fruits and vegetables in, right? People have been suggesting the use of tulle, mesh, or breathable nylon bags that are washable and reusable. Listener Judith Sloan One posted on Instagram some shots, including a produce bag in her dish drain, and writes, rinse, dry, and reuse the plastic produce bags from the store. Bring a stash with you to the supermarket. And listener Linda Batchelder writes on Twitter, rinse, clean, and dries in a blink. Whole Foods credits me 10 cents for each one. They paid for themselves. And then here's another issue. It's the issue of takeout food, which often comes with so much plastic. On that, we're hearing a few tips, like from Stephen T. Locardi on Twitter, who writes, my boyfriend's grandfather has been using the same knives and spoons for years, he means plastic knives and spoons, for years to mark where he has planted seeds in his garden. Get creative. And from Instagram user RecycleGo, ask your delivery restaurants not to give you prepackaged sauces. Use your own. They probably taste better anyway. So there are some of those tips on different kinds of single-use plastic challenges that people have. If you want more tips from our listening community, follow us on social. We'll keep running threads of your plastic challenge strategies on Twitter and Instagram. Our handles on Twitter, we're at Brian Lehrer. On Instagram, we're at Brian Lehrer Show. Check out our plastic challenge story highlights on Instagram, too. And be sure to tag us when you share your tips so we can share them out. Now we'll talk about one way that New York City might contribute to saving the planet from catastrophic levels of climate change. City Council Speaker Corey Johnson calls it breaking car culture in the city. And he joins us now, along with Nicole Gelinas, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a contributor to their City Journal magazine, who's also interested in this. So what are a progressive Manhattan politician and a staffer at a conservative think tank doing advocating something similar? Let's find out. Mr. Speaker, Ms. Gelinas, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning, Speaker.
Speaker Johnson, why have you started using this term, breaking car culture?
Well, we have to really change how we get around New York City, or improve the way we get around. And transportation is, I think, one of the biggest issues that's facing New York City and the future of New York City to remain a globally competitive city. We've seen for years and years and years how the subway system has deteriorated. Now, luckily, under the great leadership of Andy Byford, we've seen it turned around a little bit. And so I think breaking the car culture means us focusing on mass transit, making it safe and reliable and working for New Yorkers. Almost 6 million people take the subways and buses every single day. And it means prioritizing pedestrians and cyclists and people that are in buses. That is what breaking the car culture means, moving away from making sure that private automobile use is king of the road, that massive trucks are king of the road, and finding better ways to actually get people around in a safe, reliable way. Brian, you saw this week that The MTA announced an over $50 billion five-year capital plan. You've seen the results from the fast-forward plan that Andy Byford instituted in the last year and a half, and they're having great results. But it is time for us, when you have 20% increase in pedestrian fatalities across New York City this year, when you have 20 cyclists who have been killed on the streets of New York City this year, when you have more congestion and clogged and crowded streets, you need to actually do something different. And that is what I mean by breaking the car culture. It is reprioritizing things. And then lastly, transportation is a climate change issue. Period. End of story. Every discussion we have about transportation has to include the conversation about reducing emissions. But people are leaving subways and buses and getting into cars. And that should keep you up at night, because it's bad for our transportation system in the city, and it is terrible for climate change. And that is what I mean when I say it is time to finally break the car culture.
And Nicole, I saw a stat that you published that cars and trucks are responsible for nearly 30% of New York's carbon emissions. But you wrote that reducing carbon isn't even the most compelling reason for you to want to discourage driving in Manhattan. So what is, and how does it intersect with the interest in reducing carbon emissions?
Well, I think the speaker is right. If we look at who comes into Manhattan every day and how, every single day, almost 4 million people come onto the island of Manhattan to come to work, to come to shop, to come and hang out with their friends. And only 20% of those people come in by car, truck, van, taxi. The other 80% come in by some form of mass transportation.
So let me stop right there for a second, because that's an incredible stat. And that stat might suggest to people that we already have success. I imagine that there's no other city in the country, or central business district, if that's what we're considering Manhattan, where only 20% of the people coming in are coming in by car?
Yeah, we're the only city that has more than half of its workforce come in by mass transit. So in that respect, we have broken car culture, in that 40 years ago, we started to fix subway culture. 40 years ago, if you look back to 1980, 32% of people were coming in by car. We could not have added 1.5 million people to the city. We could not have added 1.1 million jobs in that 40 years. We could not have tripled our tourist visitors every year if we had not had that extra capacity on the subway system, and if we had not invested billions of dollars so that that extra subway capacity was working for us. The problem that we have today, not just for the climate — all climate is important, we all live in the climate — but just for New York City's future, is that we don't have any more extra subway capacity. So it's terrific that the MTA wants to invest $50 billion over the next 5 years in better subway bus service. But at the same time, they're looking at $500 million operating budget deficit. And so they're looking at making cuts in service, even as they add capacity, which just doesn't make any sense at all. The minute they start to cut service, the minute they start losing more riders, where are those riders going to go? They're either going to go onto cars or they'll leave the city. Neither one of those is a good outcome for the city.
So listeners, do you like this term, break car culture? Is it a goal you share with Speaker Cory Johnson and Nicole Gelinas? 212-433-WNYC. Call in either way. And if you're into this, what would you like to see done to break car culture in New York, more than it already has been broken, if 80% of people coming into Manhattan every day are not coming in by car? And of course, as a way of breaking carbon culture here and in the world. 212-433-WNYC. You might add what you're doing personally to use your own car less, or travel in cars for hire less, or even other people you know's cars less. And how can policy or street design, what Cory Johnson calls the streets, the master plan for city streets, make that easier for you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I read in Gotham Gazette, Speaker Johnson, that it said — I'm just going to read from this article — de Blasio and his administration have been reluctant to support Johnson's master plan, citing the improvements already made and in the works, and what it would require in terms of Department of Transportation workload and budget. Do you have buy-in from the administration?
Well, they didn't testify, as you just said, Brian, in favor of the bill. And we had the hearing a couple of months ago. And I really respect Commissioner Polly Trottenberg from the Department of Transportation. So I'm not sure where it's coming from. But they were not in favor of it. It is time for us to really completely revolutionize how we share street space in New York City. And that's what this proposed master plan does. It is a roadmap to breaking the car culture in a thoughtful, comprehensive way. And I think we need to get the process started right away. What it would do is it would require 50 miles of protected bike lanes to be built every single year. It would install 30 miles of protected bus lanes every year. And it would bring transit signal priority to at least 1,000 intersections a year. For listeners that don't know what that is, it means that if a bus arrives at an intersection, they would get transit signal. They would get priority to move through the intersection before private cars, and it would speed bus times up across New York City. We would dramatically expand the city's plaza program, which has been very successful in Times Square and other places, and we would quadruple the number of shared streets by 2025. So these are things that we know work, save lives, make our streets safer and more livable, and that's what this master plan seeks to do. The administration doesn't seem to be on board yet, and I think the real miscalculation in some ways is that these things, Brian, are done in a piecemeal way. So when you hear someone in Williamsburg or in Throgs Neck or in Chelsea or in Soundview or Bushwick who may be complaining about not wanting a bike lane or a bus lane go through their neighborhood, right now the city doesn't have a comprehensive way to explain how it all fits together. This is about creating a master plan to say, this is how it all works together for the future of New York City, and every neighborhood needs these type of things.
And Nicole, I was reading this morning an article that you wrote last fall in City Journal that was called De Blasio's Phony Carbon War, and asserted that the mayor talks a good game, but his policies will do little to cut down on carbon emissions from Manhattan's car traffic. Now, in fairness to him, that was written before the congestion pricing plan passed at the state level and eventually with his approval. So do you stand by that in the fall of 2019 that de Blasio is talking a good game about carbon, but his policies will do little with respect to cars?
Well, here's an example of the phony war. We're going into UN week or UN weeks because it's really 2 weeks. So all of these people are flying into New York from around the world. They're spewing carbon to get here, which is fine. They've decided that the benefit of the density and being together is worth the price to the climate. But when they get here, what do we show them? We don't show them that we are managing the cars. We show them that the cars are managing us. Half of Midtown, the entire eastern part of Manhattan from 6th Avenue to the east, is going to be a chaotic mess for these UN weeks. The city does not tell people you have to pay a high price to bring your private car in during these weeks when all these streets are cut off at different times when the president's motorcade is coming in. Instead, the city just lets these people sit in traffic for hours on end. And what does that mean to the city's quality of life? The intersections are blocked. It's very difficult to ride a bike. If you're walking around and you've got a baby carriage or you're in a wheelchair, very difficult to navigate around these cars that are blocking the intersection.
What's the alternative in a particular case like this where you have heads of state or other representatives from like 180 countries coming in for 2 weeks?
Well, when we have congestion pricing, the alternative would be the city would say, today is a high congestion day. The price for driving your vehicle into Manhattan or taking an Uber or Lyft or cab into Manhattan is going to be twice, three times, whatever is the normal price. And so you discourage people from taking a car in. Then, of course, you have to give them much better transit options so that they have some other way of getting here.
Even if you're the prime minister of Liechtenstein or whoever?
Well, no, more for people who still want to drive into the city when all of these streets are closed off.
Got
so
it.
That the prime minister of Liechtenstein Einstein can go around with his family and go from the UN to Hudson Yards Mall or whatever they want to do. But the other thing is, while we're waiting for congestion pricing, just say that it's a traffic emergency day. Say that you cannot take a private car in unless you have two or three people in the car. Bloomberg did that a couple times after Sandy, when we saw what the city looks like when mass transit is not operating, which is not pretty. Or just put more officers out there, direct the traffic better. Instead, they plunk down these cement blocks all over the sidewalks, and it's just sort of everybody for himself out there.
Let's take a phone call, because Alan in Brooklyn is calling from a bus. From a bus, Alan?
Yeah, that's right. A B-41 going into downtown Brooklyn. There's no way of ending car culture without addressing the fact that the last major route addition to the city subway system was designed when my mother was a child, and she's 90 now. Aside from the Second Avenue subway, we're living on century-old infrastructure, basically. And that doesn't serve the needs of most of the new housing in the growing areas near downtown or in the outer boroughs. And that demands new transit lines, and that demands financing based on value increase financing. Taps the increase in land value created by the transit to finance the bonds to build the transit, instead of asking strap hangers who already have limited resources or general taxpayers to foot the bill while other people make windfalls on real estate increase. That has to end.
Alan, thank you very much.
Brian, that is so quintessential New York. Brian Lehrer, Alan from Brooklyn on the B-51 bus with honking in the background, calling into the Brian Lehrer Show. I'll say I don't disagree with much of what Alan said. I mean, he is legitimate in saying it's hard to talk about these things without having a real plan to expand mass transit. And as he mentioned, you saw the Second Avenue subway, far too expensive. I mean, it was the right thing to do, but way too expensive to get those additional stops, and you saw the 7 train expansion to Hudson Yards. Those are the only two recent expansions we've seen. To talk about the UDA expansion in Brooklyn, which is a necessary expansion, to talk about actually the 2nd Avenue subway going all the way downtown, further south, these are things that we need to talk about. And I think this fast-forward plan that Andy Byford put forward doesn't talk about mass expansion of the subways, but it talks about restabilizing the system. So eventually, I think we can have that conversation, resignaling the subway system, investing in subway cars, doing these things. And the master plan for city streets, he's on a bus right now. I'm not sure how quickly the bus is moving to downtown Brooklyn, but if you're on a bus in Manhattan, you can walk across 23rd Street faster than taking the crosstown bus, or 34th Street, or 42nd Street, or 59th Street, or Houston Street, or 14th Street. It is time for us to prioritize subways and buses. It gets almost 5.8 million people around New York City every single day. That is where we need to put our priorities. It's a climate change issue, and it's also just a sanity issue. People don't want to be insane getting to work. They don't want to be pulling their hair out and screaming, waiting for the subway, looking at the countdown clocks. They're not working, getting stuck in traffic on a bus, taking 3 times the amount of time to get to the grocery store, to go see a loved one. That is what this is about.
As they say on the BX7, my most frequently used bus line, stop requested. Stop requested from the way we fund and underfund mass transit. Today, I think, is a day that they're rolling out, Nicole, or considering the next capital plan for the MTA. Alan has called before, though not before from a bus, with that particular suggestion of using land value to finance mass transit and more robustly to get new mass transit lines in the works. You're, I think, with all respect to Speaker Johnson, I think you are the mass transit finance wonk in the room. So what do you think of that particular plan?
Thank you, Brian. And I think, Alan, the good news for Alan is that we will get there in the fact that the MTA has many sources of revenue and many creatively thought out sources of revenue. The latest revenue, of course, is the congestion pricing money that will start to go toward modernizing the subway signals and the rest of the priorities that Speaker Johnson was talking about. The problem for the MTA is because their operating costs have essentially doubled over the past 15 years, is that it does face these massive operating budget deficits. So it, first of all, it has to start to come to terms with these operating costs, because operating budget cutbacks mean that all of these investments that we're making are worth far less than they should be. But yes, longer term, something like, for example, as we finish the East Side Access project to bring Long Island Railroad trains to Grand Central Station, this is good for Long Island property values. You know, you should really buy property on Long Island and sell it in New Jersey, because the property in New Jersey will be worth a lot less once that Hudson Tunnel falls apart. But yes, some way of capturing the higher value of property along that Long Island corridor, so that New York City taxpayers, property owners, and so forth are not carrying so much of this burden. But the MTA's problem is not that it hasn't been creative about finding revenue. It's really more on the cost side.
Just quickly, Brian, on Nicole's point about East Side Access, just so listeners know, it shows you how dysfunctional the MTA has been for so many years. East Side Access is, you know, a decade and a half behind schedule, and $12 billion over budget. $12 billion over budget. The cost to resignal the entire subway system, right now the only two lines that have been fully resignaled with CBTC, control-based train communication, are the L train and the 7 train, the two trains that have 90% on time rate. The cost to resignal the whole system is $9 billion. And that one project is $12 billion over budget. It shows how broken the system has been for far too long. And it's why in March I gave a speech calling for municipal control of subways and buses and the MTA in New York City, so that we could finally have accountability and not have Frankenstein's monster of transit subsidiaries that has been set up to deflect accountability, to deflect people understanding how it all works. And that is one prime example of how dysfunctional it's always been.
Sharon in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sharon.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking the call.
You're not on a bus, right?
No, not on a bus.
Just making sure.
No. I was concerned about all of the plans to modernize the streets and bring transportation into, break the car culture, from the point of view of the masses of people in the city who cannot easily, or not even easily, cannot at all use public transportation because there are no elevators, and people who do not need wheelchairs but who do walk with canes. I mean, they're all over, and it's not just because this is a getting older population.
Mm-hmm.
It's noticeable that no matter how many bike lanes are built, there are many, many people who bike outside the bike lanes, for example. And there are bike lanes that seem to get no use at all at any time, except for maybe the occasional delivery person. But this legion of people who walk with canes, who do not need wheelchairs, they seem to be left out, entirely left out of the equation, because the people need to use cars to get places. And it's not just a tiny little itty-bitty, like a few hundred people. There are thousands of mm-hmm. people in that situation.
Sharon, let me get a response for you from the speaker. Her question is very clear about people with canes, and we could throw in people in wheelchairs who, might be able to take an accessible vehicle but not so easily get into a bus or a subway.
Whether you are someone who is disabled and in a wheelchair, or you're someone who has a mobility impairment, who has a harder time getting around, who uses a cane, the system for decades has been really locking you out to be able to use it on a day-to-day basis. And so much of our subway system is not ADA compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And so part of this Andy Byford fast forward plan is to increasingly, on an year-to-year basis, make more subway stations accessible for people who have those mobility impairments. Right now, it is shameful. It is inappropriate. It is beneath the greatest city in the world to be in this situation. And so we really need to do that. And this plan really contemplates that. One of the pillars of the fast forward plan that Andy Byford put forward is greater accessibility for subway stations across the entire system. That's number one. Number two, I talked earlier about increasing bike lanes. We do need to increase bike lanes. And of course, we want cyclists to obey the rules of the road, not go the wrong way, not be outside of bike lanes, not ride on sidewalks. But ultimately, right now, what is killing New Yorkers are trucks and cars. That is what are wreaking death on a daily basis. 20% increase in fatalities amongst pedestrians, 20 cyclists killed. Since 2012, Brian, 7 pedestrians have been killed by cyclists. Okay, so in 7 years, 7 pedestrians have been killed by cyclists. It's in 7 years, over 1,000 New Yorkers, pedestrians have been killed by cars. So it's important for us not to conflate these two things and pretend like they're the same. We want everyone to be safe in New York City, but we need to get the facts out there and how we talk about this. And I understand for pedestrians, if there's a cyclist that is going the wrong way, that is whizzing by them, that's going on the sidewalk, that's scary. That's annoying. We want to make sure people are educated and obey the rules of the road. But it is not the same thing as these trucks and cars that are killing people every single day in New York City.
Let me get to one other particular before we run out of time. Nicole, in your piece in City Journal last fall, you cited Amazon as a factor by name. And I'm curious how much you think Amazon and really all the online shopping deliveries combined, of course, increasing in the city like they are everywhere, are a major factor for more carbon emissions in the city and moving us further away in terms of whatever goals we have in, you know, toward becoming carbon neutral in New York.
Well, I think we have to make sure that all companies are playing on the same fair terms. So if you want to have 5 things from Amazon delivered to your house every day rather than going out and taking a walk and, you know, buying your things at the drugstore, that's fine. But the drugstore has to pay local property taxes. It has to comply with all of these local mandates, you know, sick leave mandate, possibly coming vacation mandate. Whereas Amazon, using UPS and FedEx, doesn't have to comply with these strictly local mandates because their workforce is all over the country, and they are able to use the street space as basically free office space and free warehouse space. So congestion pricing should account for that by making these delivery trucks pay for the space that they're using on the street and making sure that the consumer sees that price so that they're making this decision based on real market forces, not on one company having an advantage over the other companies.
So you're with a conservative think tank. You, Speaker, are a Chelsea Democrat. Is there, you know, there's that old cliche, there's no liberal or conservative way to take out the garbage, which I actually think there is, but that's another show. Is there a liberal and conservative way to break car culture, Nicole?
Well, I would just end by saying last week we had a 10-year-old boy who was standing on the sidewalk waiting for a public bus, and he was run over and killed by what they call an out-of-control driver. But this happens all the time. It happened again last night when a 1-year-old baby was killed on the sidewalk in the Bronx. So I would just say that there's no conservative or liberal way to save these children's lives and to make the quality of life of the city better.
Speaker.
I mean, this is really not about partisan affiliation. Most people, when they are trying to get around New York City, they're not thinking about who is a Democrat and who is a Republican. They're thinking, just get me to work on time and just make the streets safe. And so I think this is really about making New York City a globally competitive city, an attractive city. I like to say, Brian, that we're the greatest city in the world, but it doesn't always feel that way when the subways aren't working and the buses aren't working and we have a homelessness crisis in New York City. It's hard to live in New York City. It is expensive to live in New York City. It can be annoying to live in New York City. So if you're one of the 8.6 million people who decided to live here, if you're one of the 36% of that 8.6 million that was not born in the United States but came here with your family, with dreams and aspirations, let's make it a little bit easier for you to actually get around. It's good for the economy. It's good for the environment. It's good for your own sanity. It's good for neighborhoods. It's the right thing to do. And that's why I think it's one of of the most important issues for the future of New York City, for our growth, for keeping people here, for attracting creative talent and jobs and businesses. We need to invest in mass transit and make our streets safe and livable for all New Yorkers. You need to do that if you're a conservative or a Republican or anyone in between.
New York City Council Speaker Cory Johnson and Nicole Gelinas, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a contributing editor to their City Journal. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Always fun, Brian.